This is Ty Siegel, and you're listening to the LSQ podcast. Let's try that one again.
Hi, this is Ty Siegel, and you're listening to the LSQ podcast.
That was okay.
Yeah, maybe I should have done some weird stuff like that every once in a while we were talking.
Damn.
Opportunity missed. Opportunity missed, you know.
What's up? It's Jenny LSQ. Thanks for pressing play on episode 106. And also thanks for indulging me and sharing a little bit extra of that opening stuff. I just loved how much fun Ty Siegel had recording what is normally a piece of admin we do at the end of the interview, but it makes sense and is very on brand for an artist whose catalog so clearly reflects how much he delights in having fun in the studio and trying different things. And we talk about his desire to always be trying different things as a key element of his creative vision, and what are some of the things he wants to try next, but also how he got started making music. Ty released his excellent new album, Three Bells, earlier this year, and is out on tour in North America right now.
All right.
All right, we're doing it, Ty. Since I can't see you, describe for me where you are right now, please.
I'm in my studio. You know, what's funny about the studio is it's just recently been like hybridized to digital. So it's kind of a new, not completely new thing for me, but like, you know, plugging in like a USB mic to do something like this is like way more complicated than recording a drum set or something for me. So that's pretty funny. But yeah, I'm in the studio, I'm in the control room, and that's at my house, like kind of behind my house, and the lights are low, it's raining outside, and yeah.
And so you're saying this is a new studio space or just kind of a new build in the space? How long have you been recording from there?
The studio is almost 5 years old now, which is kind of wild. But yeah, about a year and a half ago, it was just analog, pure, like fully analog before. And now it's kind of half digital, half analog. I still do most of my stuff analog, but if someone wants to come in here and not use tape, that's possible. They can do a Pro Tools thing, or I can mix a band that recorded, you know, on a computer really far away, kind of a thing. So
5 years ago, you would have already been recording albums for, you know, more than a decade at that point. So you probably, I'm guessing, had some fairly specific ideas about what you wanted, what you thought you needed from now that you were able to start from scratch, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. This is actually my, second studio, like real studio. The first one was just kind of a one room garage that we kind of expanded a little bit. That was just one, you know, maybe like 20 feet by 20 feet big space. And which is totally enough room to do stuff in. But this one is three rooms and was built from scratch and, you know, has the correct acoustic treatment and all these little bells and whistles to have fun. And yeah, fun to build something like that for sure.
See, kids, sometimes garage rock literally comes from a garage. That's how it got its fucking name.
It's true. At least the old studio was a garage. This could be used as one though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so intrigued about that aspect of what you do, about the production side of it and the getting the sound you want. Because my perception of your music is always that it has this, you know, it comes from a classic vibe. It has like, it's a sound with history. And part of what I've always appreciated about your catalog is that it in a meaningfully modern way taps into some of those classic sonic elements. So I'd love to hear a bit about how you've kind of evolved your approach over the years, kind of incorporating some of the more digital things that you say, you know, are in the studio now, you prefer analog. But yeah, looking at your recording process for this new album, Three Bells, compared to, you know, when you started recording yourself back in, you know, what, 07 or 08, how has it changed?
You know, it's just, you know, I'm just trying to pick up little, you know, pieces of information or techniques or moves along the way as I go. And I've been lucky to, you know, work with lots of really amazing engineers. On this record, Cooper Crane he's a totally, you know, incredible producer engineer. And in the past, you know, Albini and this engineer, Chris Woodhouse, and, you know, Eric Bauer in San Francisco. And you know, my friends and I, too, we used to just kind of like talk about recording and swap ideas and techniques. And so it's just kind of an ever changing thing. I'm actually getting a bit more back to basics at the moment. I'm kind of getting into a bit more of the 3 drum mics kind of a thing and less, you know, 10 drum mics. And these are all very specific, you know, kind of technical things, but they do kind of add up and create the feeling of a recording, whether it's going to be like really pristine, close mic'd 70s style, you know, the golden era of kind of that studio recording, or you want to go kind of old school, just a couple mics and just place it correctly. You know, it's like all over the place. So that's kind of a hard question to answer, because I'm kind of one of those guys that like wants everything to be a little different. So I feel like there's been no kind of direct pathway to where I am. It's always been a bit of a left turn, right turn, you know, jump up, dig a hole, you know, whatever that is, you know. So I the main difference is just kind of having more of a space that is mine that I can experiment in now, I guess. And I just kind of continue to work for that goal over time. So I wouldn't have to feel the pressure of like the clock running out in a studio and then being experimental, but then like not finishing something. So now it's kind of nice to explore those experiments. I'm pretty sure I did not answer your question at all.
You totally did, actually. I don't sense that you're the kind of person who knows the exact tally of the number of albums you've made in the various guises under which you play, and including under your own name. But do you have an estimate? Because listeners, brace yourself. It's a large number. I mean, this is 15. This is your 15th proper 15th studio album, just as Ty Siegel. But when I scan through the discography of all of the things, it looks like it's got to be something like 50 albums with all the different projects.
There's no way it's 50. That's just completely wild. I would say, you know, let's do a little thing here. So 3 records with Fuzz, 2 records with Gogs, 2 records with CIA. Then I'm on like a bunch of records. I don't know. I would probably say, you know, solidly ones that I would say are like my projects or something, 25.
That's a lot. Maybe. Still a lot. we're only talking about 16 years here.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of those are you know, collaborations. I can't take credit for even half of the ideas on those records, you know, maybe a third or a quarter. So it doesn't, you know, I'm like cheating a little bit if you look at it that way, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, does it feel to you like an abundance? I mean, does it feel like making music is something that you're always wanting to do abundantly?
I mean, I love making things, and, you know, not all those things need to be released or consumed. And maybe I'm not going to really release as much as I used to. I really used to love the idea of just getting in a room with a bunch of people and just making something and having it feel good, like the energy and the feeling be like immediate. And I actually haven't really done that in a minute, and I kind of want to do that again. But I've drifted away from that because I kind of wanted to focus more on the studio deep dive recording. But back in the day, I think there was a lot of that, and you just kind of go quick because you're not really worried about, oh, is that a vocal take perfect, because it just has to feel right, and then you just move on. You know, it's just like throwing paint everywhere, and then even like leaving the room and going back into the room and checking out what the paint looks like a week later. You don't even like check it out in the moment, you know what I mean? That was kind of the feeling for a lot of those recordings, which is fun. I don't think a lot of people do that. I think more people should do that. It's a good creative thing.
Yeah, as opposed to like every sort of, you know, studio album, the even the term studio album, you know, like it's so lofty, like, well, there it is. It better be good and be good enough to last for a couple of years before you do it again. Like,
yeah, it's a lot of pressure.
Exactly. Exactly. Like it's, there's nothing wrong with having albums that are that you worked on for varying amounts of time, I guess, is the thing.
Yeah, every project should be different, I think. You know, I think that it's really cool to have lower stakes kind of recordings where it's like, yeah, just set up a few mics and see what happens. And sometimes, you know, that stuff's magical. And other times it's not, you know, and then sometimes the big studio move isn't very, doesn't feel right. You know, it's too safe or it's too precious or something like that. So
when did you first start to care about music, like as a kid?
I guess I've always liked music, is what my folks have told me. So I was like the little kid in the backseat singing along to every song. And I kind of grew up in the hair metal war moment. So I would be singing, you know, Warrant and GNR, you know, all that stuff in the backseat. But I remember like really getting into music when I was like, when I got a cassette deck headphone, like a Walkman. And then I kind of, it became like my thing. And then the radio too, I would like stay up at night and listen to oldies radio when I was supposed to be asleep.
When it was like 50s and 60s shit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. As soon as the 70s stuff got in there, I was like, what's going on? This isn't oldies. What is this? No, but that was really, really like kind of a life-changing situation, the radio. And then very specifically when I was like maybe 10 or 11, I got kind of infatuated with records and I asked for a record player. And right around that time, my neighbor across the street was moving away, and it's like a pretty funny story, but she gave me like a stack, like 25 LPs. It was like Love It to Death, Alice Cooper, The Who, Tommy, the first Black Sabbath record, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, Bowie, Low, you know, like all these really great records. I didn't quite understand Bowie Low at that moment, but it's like a total like hilarious kind of almost famous type of situation where you got gifted this like stack of, oh, like AC/DC, stuff like that, where I was just totally hooked. You know, Alice Cooper, Love It to Death, that was like the coolest thing I had ever heard in my life when I was 11.
Yeah. So at that point, you had found like the more little kid moment where you just innately were drawn to that oldies radio stuff, those kinds of classic 50s and 60s songs, right? Tell me a little more about that. What are some of the songs you still remember that just, you know, stole your heart kind of?
Yeah, it was like the Ronettes and the kind of Phil Spector stuff and the Beach Boys and then the Motown and soul music and the Beatles and the Kinks. And I mean, all just the classic, you know, probably more of the early 60s stuff really like I thought sounded really cool. And I got really into like, I would kind of daydream into like different like, I don't know, music kind of made me daydream and kind of escape a bit. I always remembered that being a really positive thing for me. Yeah, and then you get into like weirder music later and then the daydreams get more outlandish and wild, you know, so it's a cool headspace. But
when you were equipping yourself with tapes for that Walkman, what was that? What were you going and buying for to listen to for yourself once you could do that?
I remember the first tape I had that was my tape. It was just, you know, such a cliche but awesome thing. It was Abbey Road. So that was like my tape. And the Beatles were my favorite band. I mean, I don't know if they're my favorite band now, but they're one of them. So, you know, pretty life-changing stuff. And like, you know, the Mean Mr. Mustard, Polythene Pam, She Came In Through the Bathroom Window is still one of the coolest parts of any record. So being like 10 and being like, what is this? Pretty cool.
Yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, I'm projecting a little bit that some of this is the songcraft part of it, but it does sound like based on what you were drawn to even then, that it was this kind of mysterious combination of like trippy production and like undeniable classic songcraft kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a pop guy, you know, a hook. I love a hook, but I also love an interesting thing, other element with the hook, whether it's interesting production or I think it just had to do with like, I don't know, like escapism or like interesting sounds that that like sparked something in my brain. I don't know. I still don't know what that is.
When did you feel inspired to start writing or play, you know, learning an instrument or writing your own music?
I started like my dad gave me a drum set when I was 2, which is funny. And I would, you know, I did what a 2-year-old does on a drum set, which is just wail on it. And then I became disinterested in it. And then I became interested in it again when I was about 10. So I started trying to learn how to play the drums when I was 10 or 11. And then I got a bass when I was 12. And then I got a guitar when I was maybe 14. And I never really, I was just trying to play Ramones songs and stuff. You know, I never really tried to make anything of my own until way later, you know, and I just want to have fun. That was the whole thing. I thought it was really fun and a good way to, I don't know, daydream a bit with your friends.
Yeah. And so did you start like, yeah, getting friends together to, when was your first band?
Yeah, I kind of jammed a bunch and had a bunch of weird kind of like, you know, oh, let's learn whatever song. And then you just play that song 5 times in a row for like 2 weeks straight kind of hangs with people. And then I had this band, my first kind of real band was this band called Epsilons that actually Charles was in, and it's kind of just like a garagey type of band. And we had no aspirations except to play a show. And then it's kind of like, then we played a show and then we had no aspirations except to record a demo. And then we recorded a demo and then we're like, wow, well, maybe let's do a 7-inch. And then it just kind of kept going. And then I got hooked on recording, and then it became like that's all I want to do is record stuff.
Oh, okay, interesting. That's so, yeah, so that seems like that's the part that you can't quit, the recording and the production part, more so than the playing shows and having a band.
I love playing with people, and it doesn't really matter if it's in front of a crowd or in a little room with nobody there. I love making stuff. Frankly, you know, I love playing shows, but I have way more fun crafting a thing in a studio than playing a show. You're making something new. You're working out an idea. It's more of a different brain activity than, I guess, yeah, this goes into a whole another thing, but when I'm playing guitar, it's a way different thing than when I'm playing drums. I think live playing drums is way more kind of like a intuitive brain situation for me. So that's a different kind of tangent there, but
And what about singing? Because, you know, you have like a very good singing voice, you know, not all rock singers do, but you can wail as a singer as well. Is that something you connected with even as a kid? Did you have a sense like, okay, yeah, I can carry a tune, or this is cathartic in some way?
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I did musical theater in high school, and I did the chorus in high school, and I was all about singing, and I guess that was just one way of being musical. I never thought I was any sort of real singer. I still feel insecure about that. I think that's my biggest insecurity with my music. But you know, it's like anything, you have to practice and you have to keep trying to hone in on your craft. You know, so it's a work in progress. But yeah. That's cool. I don't know. It was kind of more of a necessity thing because no one else wanted to sing. So I kind of got forced into singing in the bands.
When you were doing musical theater in high school, like what musicals were you in the chorus for?
Oh man. I was in, let's see here. Bye Bye Birdie. I was in The Music Man.
There's Trouble Right Here in River City with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
Yep. I was in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying or something. I forget what that one's called. I was kind of checked out by the end of high school, I got to admit. I was ready to get out of high school. So But no, I was in the barbershop quartet and the music band. That was pretty interesting.
Holy shit, 76 trombones and all that. Also, I feel like it is interesting to note for listeners that this does overlap in high school with being at the same in the same town where the MTV series Laguna Beach was being filmed at your school.
Oh yeah. Yes, that is very true.
This is the same time you're like a junior and senior in high school and there's this new MTV series and here they are at your school. Dear Lord.
Well, you've done your research. Yes. Yeah, that was a rough one. Very, very rough one. And strangely enough, the like city council, you know, it went through the city council and everybody thought it was a good idea. And they almost got to film it at my school while we were all going to school. And at the last minute, I don't know what happened, the city or the PTA or something stopped it. But yeah, it was pretty obnoxious to be walking around and there'd be some MTV crew.
Yeah, totally. Also, as someone who is like, you know, doing more countercultural things or starting to think, you know, like rock and roll music is, I guess, still countercultural in, you know, an environment like that. Do you feel like kind of once you got out of high school and that kind of vibe was settling in around home, that it made you even more interested in like underground culture?
Frankly, I just didn't tell anybody I was from Laguna Beach for years because that's all anybody would talk to me about. But I think that moment just kind of, I don't know, it kind of helped Laguna get further and further away from its weirdo history. And there was a lot of cool artists there and weirdo stuff from the 60s and 50s and 70s that there was still a little bit of that feeling there. And some people were still around when I was a little kid, and now it's completely gone. But I feel like that was one of the big moments in time that like made it change to end the weirdness.
And then you went to San Francisco and you found some like young weirdos.
Yeah, totally.
How did you kind of connect with, you know, with folks like John Dwyer and the scene that was already kind of happening there?
I mean, I was a fan of John's. I loved the Coach Whips and I loved Pink and Brown. And yeah, I played a show with, no, I didn't play with John, but he was at that show and I had a broken arm and played the drums with a cast on, and he thought that was hilarious. And so we struck up a conversation, and then he asked that band to play a show with OCs, who at the time were the OCs. And then we just, became friends. And then I showed him some solo stuff I was working on, and he was like, you know what, I'll put it out, man. And, you know, and through him, met the guys from the Sick Alps and joined Sick Alps for a while. And then, you know, it was just like a totally amazing scene at that moment where everybody was kind of playing on everybody else's records and supporting everybody. And yeah, really, really amazing time.
Tell me a bit about your like your songwriting process. Like how do you set aside specific time to work, or do you kind of work when you feel something emerging?
It's really different all the time. I do set aside time now. I treat it a little bit more like, you know, I should go in the studio once a week because it's here. Unless I've just finished something, I'll take some time off. But I'm the kind of person that once I'm working on something, I'll dive in really, really deeply and be kind of stuck working on it until it's done. So I'm a little bit like, should I work on this thing right now, or should I give myself another week? Because once I start, I'm going to be in it for a while.
You mentioned earlier a couple of times this idea of like musical pursuits being an escape or a way to do some kind of productive daydreaming and stuff like that. Is that still part of the feeling of and part of what you enjoy about it?
I mean, not so much actually, you know, making music is more like it's like conceptual art or something, which is a totally cheesy way to put it, but you have this idea and you want that idea to make people, you know, react or feel something. And that can be really like open to whatever. I like to leave the interpretations for what I make really open, but that it doesn't make me kind of have that daydream thing. I think I try to, one goal would be for people to have that reaction themselves to my music. That's a pretty That'd be pretty amazing if that ever happens. And I don't really get that anymore with music that often. I think I'm too deep now. I'm kind of a critical listener. I'm like dissecting things in a different way now. But
you can see the Matrix.
I just am like, yeah, wow, that drum pattern's insane. What's that? You know. But I think certain things like drums or like kind of doing some sort of improvisational thing, that's a bit more of like the ethereal, nonverbal, non-thinking brain space, which is, I love that space.
I mean, I suppose in a way, lyric writing is the opposite in that it's the most verbal, but how does your lyric writing process tend to work?
It's funny. I'm kind of at a crossroads right now with that, where I need to, I really want to change how I do it, because I feel like I've kind of hit the end of a road of a style that I've developed, and maybe I'll get back onto that road eventually. But it's usually been a bit more of like a mumbling sound. Very much, I'm obsessed with the sound and the melody working, rather than having the lyrics written first and then making the lyrics fit into a melody. I like to have the phrasing kind of work. And the best case is that, you know, the lyrics and melody kind of just show up at the same time. And that definitely does happen. But, and you know, once you get kind of the phrasing going for me, then you kind of chip away at it. And sometimes it's just a line that you need to look at and like, oh, that's going to be the foundation for the song. So is that what the song is about? Is that line? Or it's a reaction to another song as more of like a big piece of music, like an album. Like this new album kind of did that, like turned into a bit more of a conceptual thing. So the lyrics of later songs were informed by the lyrics from the earlier songs I was working on for the record. But it's funny, whenever I answer these questions, I have no answers to like how I make stuff, because I'm actively trying to make it differently every time, which I don't know if it's a good thing, but it's the only way I can do it, because I think I would not have any fun at all if it was just the same process the whole time.
I know this is kind of a subtle question, but do you want it to be different every time because you want it to sound different, or because you want it to feel different?
Yeah, I think that answer depends on the song and the situation. You know,
totally. I mean, I think, and just to elaborate on why I'm asking that, and also for listeners, it's like Ty's music, it really does stretch across so many genres, you know. I mean, under sort of the larger rock umbrella, but you know, I'm curious if the dynamics of that are informed by wanting to try all of it, sort of wanting to, you know, do a bit of punk and a bit of glam and a bit of prog and a bit of country and being like, no, I like that too, as opposed to being informed by just like not wanting to replicate yourself.
Yes, I think that there are so many interesting places in music that I'll never get to, that I want to use the opportunities I have to try to continue to explore the places I haven't gotten to yet. And sometimes it, you know, it's not fruitful, and it's not, you know, it's like, oh, well, that was not so great. But other times it's, you know, it's cool for sure. Yes, the answer is yes.
Are there sort of things on your future cast that you are like, you haven't tried yet, that you can feel yourself gravitating toward?
Yeah, I want to do a non-lyrical album that would pack the punch of a lyrical one. I think that's really hard, and I think it'll be really fun to do. I feel like it would, you know, doing with other people and having it be kind of like an improvisational thing is kind of the first way I would think of doing it, but I kind of want to do it alone and have it be very like a musical conversation with myself. That's one thing. And I mean, there's a million ideas. I would love to do an a cappella record. That's, again, a big undertaking.
Wow. Like sort of like, you mean inspired by your Music Man experience in high school? Little barbershop quartet kind of acapella? Is that what you're thinking?
No.
No. Classier, Jenny. Classier.
I don't know what it would be. I think it would be what it's going to be. That's one thing, is that you know, the intention, the musical intention of trying to make something often turns into a completely different musical outcome. And so that's one thing I've learned, is that you got to let it be what it's going to be. You can't try to make it a certain thing, and it's actually not cool if you do, for me. So who knows?
You talked about, you know, having the stuff in your studio that other artists might need, and that's, I'm imagining, not so they can use your space, but also so you can be producing with other artists. Do you have any sort of project? I'm wondering about the extracurriculars. Like, do you have anything like that that you're working on or excited about in the coming months?
Yeah, I don't think I'm allowed to talk about like a couple bands I'm going to work with, because, you know,
the ink's not dry.
It's the PR thing. But I'm working with some bands and recording some albums, and you know, I actually can't really talk about the couple of things I got going on, because I'm not supposed to.
That's always a good sign, though.
Yeah.
And outside of music, I mean, do you feel inspired to do other kinds of writing and other kinds of creative projects, you know, in the general future?
Yeah, you know, I like to paint. I like to paint dogs, which is really fun. It's a very specific mind activity that makes me very happy. And I specifically love to paint my two dogs.
What medium do you use?
I just use acrylic. I tried to use oil, and you know, you can guess I'm a little impatient, so that didn't work. So I need it to dry fast. So acrylic works well for me. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to actually get away from kind of other like artistic endeavors and just kind of be a bit more of a, you know, a human walking in the park kind of a style. That sounds good. Just to kind of have some nice sunshine. Those are the things that I aspire to do. Be outside more, stuff like that.
Human things. Go do human things with your dog. Human and dog things, you know, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's up.
Your dogs are sitting there. They're like, stop painting us and just come hug us.
Can you take us outside, please?
I think that's kind of a great place for us to conclude, Ty.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Thanks again to Ty for that awesome conversation. And you can keep up with Ty at ty-siegel.com. And you can find other episodes of the LSQ podcast at jennylsq.com and on all the platforms. When you've got feedback or questions, reach me on socials at jennylsq. Thanks again for listening.